Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Guitarist Steven Van Zandt of the E Street Band knows plenty about good band chemistry, and for 40 years, his favorite group and one of the 60s most influential bands, The Rascals, lay dormant in what he called a crime against nature. But that all changed in 2009 when Van Zandt orchestrated a triumphant return to the stage for The Rascals, best known for hits like Good Lovin', Groovin', Lonely Too Long, and It's a Beautiful Morning. Really? Get away too soon. I can't imagine anything that's better. The world is ours whenever we're together. There ain't a place I like to be instead. The Broadway show, written, directed, and produced by Van Zandt, combined a jam-packed Rascals concert and film footage covering the history of the group. Now, Once Upon a Dream starring The Rascals is on the road, including a stop at the Palace Theater in Albany on November 24th. In addition to his work with Bruce Springsteen and as a solo artist, Steven Van Zandt has appeared on screen as Silvio in The Sopranos and on Lilyhammer on Netflix, and last year assembled the soundtrack and trained the musicians for the David Chase film Not Fade Away. Steven Van Zandt, welcome to The Roundtable.
Thank you, Ian. Nice to be here.
What was it about The Rascals that first spoke to you when you were very much younger?
Well, for one thing, we thought you had to be English to be a rock star. You know, it was right at the peak of the British invasion, as we called it. The Beatles had come over, the Big Buck Five, the Animals, the Kinks, the Who, the Rolling Stones. Everybody on the radio for about a year was English. And suddenly, not only was there a group from America, but a group from New Jersey, no less, called The Rascals on the radio. And that was just enormously influential for us to even consider that maybe we could be part of this wonderful new world, you know, this new rock world, which didn't exist, you know, 2 years earlier. And for those of us who were, you know, freaks and misfits and outcasts who were not going to go to college and didn't really want to join the military or didn't want to go to our parents, jobs, you know, we had no place to go. So all of a sudden there was a new world opened for us and a kind of hope that, you know, we could maybe find a place in this world that made sense for us. So the Rascals were extremely important. And by the way, we're fantastic live. I mean, they were the most exciting live group in the world back then. Eddie, the most exciting front man, literally made Mick Jagger look like he was standing still. Dino Danelli, the undisputed greatest drummer in the history of rock and roll. Any drummer will tell you that, twirling his sticks. And very, very, very exciting. And Felix introducing that big B3 organ straight out of the gospel church. No one had ever seen one of those big pieces of furniture before. And Gene, a great guitar player. So they were extremely exciting live. And you can trace the E Street Band directly back to the Rascals.
Do you remember the first time you heard them or saw them?
Yes. It was in a roller skating rink, which is where the rock and roll venue of choice back then. In fact, it may have been kind of on the upper scale of the rock and roll venues. It was a big battle of the bands at the Keyport Roller Drone, and big battle of the bands that we were in, and the winner opened for the Rascals that night, and it's the most exciting, one of the most exciting nights of my life, to have them, you know, to see them up close. Very, very exciting.
Did you take in your own stagecraft anything from the Rascals?
Well, it was really quite a bit in terms of the influence of soul music. They were the first blue-eyed soul band, which is just a way of saying white kids playing black music. But at that point in time, every white band was playing black music, including the British Invasion. But the British Invasion, of course, was twice removed from the source by being English. The Rascals were very, very close to the real thing. And they served as a bridge for us young white kids a bridge to the original soul music, artists who we would be listening to just a year later. I mean, you know, within a year we'd be listening to the Temptations and Sam Cooke and James Brown, you know. But when you're, you know, whatever, 13, 14 years old, you sometimes need that bridge to get to the source, and the Rascals served as that bridge to soul music for us, and so we grew up half rock and roll and half soul music, really, as did most of the industry. Interestingly, if you look back and look at the TV shows, and we were blessed to have like 8 rock and roll TV shows on every week, if you can imagine such a thing. You know, you look back at Hullabaloo or Shindig or the Ready, Steady, Go from England, and it would be the Beatles would come on, and then Marvin Gaye, and then the Stones, and then Smokey Robinson. You know, every single one of those shows was a combination of the new rock bands and the soul music that had influenced them. So we grew up with that, and I would take that right into Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes, which was the concept of that band. And now you can see it with the E Street Band. You know, the way we have transformed ourselves for this tour is much more literally a soul band, with 5 horns and background singers and the whole thing. So directly related to the Rascals in terms of the influence on me creatively.
So in the history of the group, now they're one of the biggest bands of the 60s, and this was at a time when rock music was the pop music. What happened that they went their separate ways for so long?
Well, that's what's interesting. You know, we talk about it in the show. It was no one big traumatic event, fortunately, which, you know, would have been maybe difficult to overcome. There was no such event. It just sort of, people just sort of drifted away from each other. You know, the role of management cannot be underestimated. If you look through rock and roll history and see who was the most successful, without exception, you will find a management presence playing a major role, and I think that was what was lacking. Their management had become a little bit too loose, and they just drifted apart, really, and never quite found. You know, they're very idealistic guys, very, very, very tough when it came to their art, very uncompromising. So they never wanted to, you know, reunite just to do the oldie circuit and do that thing. Nothing wrong with that. I have a lot of friends doing the oldie circuit, but they didn't feel they wanted to do that. You know, I realized that. So I knew I had to create something that would be artistically interesting to them in order for them to come back together and reunite for real. And that would require something that was, you know, creative and something that they could be, they would associate themselves with and feel they were not diluting their legacy and in fact doing quite the opposite. This was fully intended to celebrate their legacy and ensure that people now learn the story, which is quite a good story, and their place in history, and be reminded about all those great, great songs. We are doing a full definitive concert inside the show while we're telling their story. We're still doing 28 songs, so it's quite a definitive concert in and of itself. You know?
You know, you've described the moment you first heard them playing again as giving you goosebumps, and I have to imagine, you know, that is a humongous risk to take after so long away, literally 4 decades of not playing together. It might not have turned out as well as it did, clearly.
Well, you're so right, and that's why I was completely secretive about it. I didn't tell anybody I was doing it, including the, you know, we reunited them for the Christian Ankar Cancer Benefit, and it was my wife's idea to reunite them, and I did 3 days of rehearsal before I told anybody that we were going to do it, because I didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, they could have walked in and started a fist fight for all I know. Could they still sing? Could they still play? I didn't know. So, it was a risk, but not a public one. You know, it was done very privately, and then once they started playing together, it was amazing. It really was goosebumps, and I just thought, oh, I got to find a way to keep this together. I have to do it.
Didn't you ever worry, even forget the public side of it, but a risk to your own memories and fondness for what they sounded like at such a formative time for you? I mean, what if it hadn't worked?
Yeah, you know, you gotta, and that's an important point, you know, because for many years I never wanted to meet any of my heroes, you know, I never really wanted to even meet them. Just on the off chance that they'd be, you know, a jerk, and then I couldn't listen to their music anymore. You know, that's how important, you know, the music was to me growing up. I didn't even want to take a chance on meeting them, never mind, you know, producing a live show or whatever. So you have a good point there. But at a certain point you say, well, you know, I got to do the thing that's sort of, I got to take the chance. You know, I got to take the shot because what the reward is so much more than that painful moment might be, where you realize this is not going to happen, and you know, just keep the memories and forget about the rest. But the reward is that generations to come will get a chance to hear this music, and I frankly felt a little bit of an obligation to do that. I think we have let down and disappointed future generations enough. I think we need to sort of, we owe future generations a bit more than we're giving them right now. We're already going to be, you know, this is already going to be the first generation that didn't have it better than their parents. You know, I think we've screwed things up pretty good economically and environmentally, and now, musically, I mean, the reason why I started my radio show was because, you know, there's no access to the Renaissance. You know, the greatest music ever made is hard to find. And that's really a terrible, terrible thing. So, you know, I started the radio show, and this Rascal show is all part of that same thing, of just reminding people what greatness is. And when you experience greatness, it's inspiring. It's motivating. And the unintended consequence of this show, which is really wonderful, is by transporting people back to the 60s for 2 hours. It really is transforming people because, you know, the music, of course, is the greatest soundtrack ever for this trip. But when you get back to the 60s for 2 hours, you start to feel that environment. And what is the environment of the 60s? Well, with all the tumultuous events, with all of the wars and the cities burning down and assassinations and you name it, with all that going on, the main thing we felt back then was optimism. Optimism and hope. And you realize, you know what? That's gone. That no longer exists in our society. And what a shame. What a shame that is, you know, and you miss it. And it gets very emotional, this show. You know, you laugh, you cry, but you also feel, you grieve a little bit for that lost opportunity, you know, and for that lost future. You know, what happened to all that optimism, you know? And so people are coming out feeling, you know, cleaner, man. It's like a psychic bath. It's like, you know, cleaning off all that negativity that we're drowning in every single day with our 24 hours of news. It's all bad news, of course. Gets rid of all that negativity for a minute, you know, and you feel cleaner, and you feel you know, you feel that optimism. And that's the most wonderful part of the show.
One, two, three.
You know, you play in one of the most celebrated rock bands in the world. You've rescued the Rascals from a certain level of anonymity historically. You worked on the David Chase film, Not Fade Away, crafting a soundtrack and teaching the actors how to play in the style that's so important to you. So why is it that you feel this responsibility to that era? And second question, you mentioned earlier in the interview that, you know, growing up you had 8 television rock shows to watch at any time. Where do you see the future of this idiom going?
Well, first of all, you know, I have to do these things for selfish reasons of just, you know, I want to turn the radio on and hear cool stuff, you know. So I have my own station now. I can do that on Sirius XM. You know, I want to go to the movies and see cool movies like Not Fade Away. I want to tune into cool TV shows like Lilyhammer and hear a great soundtrack and you know, and I want to go to Broadway or you know, and see the Rascals and you know, that's my own personal taste and my own sort of selfish reasons. And then there is history. I think history is important. I think it's our obligation to archive history and the important stuff and make it available to future generations. I think that is absolutely our responsibility and the obligation of everybody of one generation to the next. And then there's a big dose of gratitude which I feel towards the entire rock genre, the entire Renaissance period of 51 to 71. You know, these guys, you know, these bands that literally gave me a life that I wouldn't have had. I don't know. I probably would have ended up a real soprano if not, because I didn't have a whole lot of choices. You know, very lucky to grow up when I did. Very, very lucky to have made a living doing this thing that I love. And that's something that I really do feel I owe everybody from the 60s and 50s, really. And anything I can do for them, I wish I was 10 different people, believe me. I would do this show like I did for the Rascals. I'd do it for them all because they all deserve to have this show and to tell their story. You know, everybody has a good story to tell, probably. You know, so I wish I could do more of that you know, but you know, you do what you can do, but a lot of it is gratitude too.
Well, Steven Van Zandt is the director and writer of the show Once Upon a Dream, starring the Rascals, which was on Broadway and will stop at the Palace Theater in Albany on November 24th. And of course, you can catch Steven Van Zandt in the E Street Band and on the Netflix series Lilyhammer. He's known from The Sopranos and many other projects. Steven Van Zandt, it's just been a pleasure to have you on the roundtable, and congratulations on all your successes.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ian. It's been a pleasure to be here. And by the way, we could mention that we're not bringing out a cut down road show version of this show. We're bringing the actual Broadway show everywhere we go. So I'm on in Albany to see the real thing. So we're doing that everywhere. We're bringing the whole real Broadway show so everybody gets the full experience.
Again, Once Upon a Dream, starring the Rascals, and it's in Albany at the Palace Theater, November 24th. Thank you again.
My pleasure, Ian.
And you're listening to The Roundtable. on WAMC.